I'm San Francisco Chronicle columnist Heather Knight, and you're listening to Fifth and Mission. Just as life is starting to feel brighter in the Bay Area, India has been hit with a devastating coronavirus surge that's infecting hundreds of thousands of people every day. Chronicle Health reporter Aaron Alday talks about why life has gotten so grim in India after a year of weathering the coronavirus pandemic pretty well. She's also discussing some happier news that a vaccine for 12 to 15-year-olds should be ready soon. Aaron Alday, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Heather Knight.
Continuing to be the busiest woman at the Chronicle, you have two stories we're going to talk about today on the coronavirus front. First one is a very sad story about the devastation in India. Life seems to be beginning to return to normal in the Bay Area, and I think people are feeling happy and optimistic for the first time in a long time, but it's a very different picture around the world. So can you describe what's happening there?
Yeah, it's really awful, honestly. It's a humanitarian crisis, the likes of which we haven't really seen so far in this pandemic. And, you know, as we all well know, things have been awful throughout this pandemic. We've seen a lot of, you know, death, a lot of really serious illness, you know, in our own country, in our own cities. But what's happening in India right now is just on a whole other scale. It's honestly kind of hard to wrap your head around it. They're reporting about 350,000 cases a day right now, which
wow.
I know. And I mean, in the United States, like in our worst, we were probably about 200, 250,000, which, I mean, we have a smaller population, so that's horrifying to like make that comparison.
Yeah.
But the thing you have to keep in mind with India is that that's probably a pretty dramatic undercount because mm-hmm. it's just so overwhelming there. And, you know, their cities are very, very dense. So, and people live under very dense conditions. And so when, you know, I've talked to people who when the virus gets into, you know, a neighborhood or a city, it just spreads like everywhere. I mean, just every single person, you know, in sight will get it. And so people feel like if they just walk out their front door, it's just right there kind of all around them. The people I talk to, you know, who have family, they're like, they don't want to go outside at all, even with a mask on because of fear of coming into contact with the virus. And they're also,
wow.
you know, they're reporting now, I think just on Thursday, 3,600 deaths from COVID-19, which far outpaces what we ever reported in the United States under our worst conditions. And again, that's also, you know, almost certainly a pretty dramatic undercount. And just the descriptions you hear from the ground there, from reporters on the ground, from people, you know, on social media and people talking to their families of bodies lined up to be cremated, of so many kind of funeral pyres kind of burning at once that they light up the night sky. Like, it's just awful.
Oh my gosh.
And then people, you know, the hospitals are full, right? And so people can't get hospital beds. They are, you know, suffering in the street. They're dying in the street. They're dying at home. And they're running out of oxygen. They're begging for oxygen supplies from all of the, you know, from countries around the world. So it's just like, it is kind of like the worst case scenario that we have all sort of imagined this virus could be for a year. And now, you know, the fact that it's happening when we have this vaccine available and when things are looking, you know, so much better here, I think just makes it that much more striking.
Yeah. Why is it so bad there now, a year into the pandemic?
Well, you know, there's a lot of questions around that. I think there are two probably main things that people look at. One is, I mean, India actually did really well with its pandemic for a long time. They had a pretty strict lockdown for many months. Like, people, you know, could only leave their homes during certain hours of the day. And masking was actually pretty universally popular there. You know, people were really kind of sticking to a lot of these restrictions. And that paid off. They were doing really well. And basically, it's kind of what we hear about, where they very quickly loosened a whole lot of restrictions back in about January. And it was just premature, right? Like, they just thought that they were past the worst of it. They knew the vaccines were out there. They hadn't really started vaccinating their public yet, but they knew that the vaccines, you know, existed and would be available. And they just thought they could get away with this. And I think there was a lot of political pressure, too. The prime minister began holding big political rallies. There was a big Hindu festival that took place that they allowed to go on that, you know, involved, you know, millions of people doing pilgrimages from rural parts of the country, all, you know, to these big cities. And so that's, you know, they brought a lot of people together. And then anecdotally, you know, you just hear the same thing we had, which is people were holding weddings, they were doing baby showers, they were doing kind of, you know, all the gatherings that we've all been instructed not to do for so long. And they were doing that because they were told that it was time, that it was safe. So that's part of what was going on. And then there's also concern that variants are really propelling this particular surge for them, that there are, you know, this is happening as there are these known more infectious variants, you know, all over the world. And that's probably making, you know, a bad situation that much worse.
Yeah. Your lead on this story is just such a gut wrencher. You talked to a research scientist at San Francisco's Gladstone Institutes, and his family is all in India. So I wondered if you could just tell listeners about what has happened to his family.
Yeah. So I spoke with Rahul Suryavanshi, who is he's like a postdoc, like a research scientist at Gladstone. And he had just moved here from the East Coast in January. And so at the time, you know, we were in this winter surge in the Bay Area, and, you know, it was kind of a bad situation here, but things were looking really good in India, where he's from. But then, you know, there was this very quick turnaround where things started really improving here, and things got real bad real fast in India. And basically his entire family got COVID-19. His mother, his father, his grandmother, his brother, his sister-in-law, two cousins, and even his three-month-old niece, who was hospitalized. The baby was hospitalized.
Oh my gosh.
I know. I mean, I think most of those family members were also hospitalized. So they all got very sick. And his mom in particular ended up in the hospital for 18 days. And when I spoke with him on Tuesday, you know, she had been there for a few weeks, and he was very worried about her, very worried in particular because she was on oxygen. And he knew that oxygen supplies were running low, and he was very concerned about that she would run out of oxygen. And also, just, he said the hospital was overrun. He said the doctors there in ICU have like 36 patients under their care. Like, it's just too many. And he knew she wasn't getting the treatment that he wanted for her, that it was too overwhelming. And then I learned, you know, on Thursday that she had, his mom had died Thursday morning. And it's just, when I talked to him before then and then after, it's just, it's hard to kind of understand how hard it is to be so far away from all your family when this is happening. And he really wanted, even, you know, before her passing, he really wanted to go back there, and he wanted to feel like he could help them, that he could, you know, he's got this expertise. He's a scientist, like, he knows his stuff, and he thought he could, you know, do more to protect them, but he's just too far away. And then now, of course, with his mom having died, he can't be there to grieve with them. And I haven't talked to him about that, but I can't imagine how hard that is. But he also has, you know, a wife and a small child here in San Francisco with him. So, you know, he's got that, you know, that responsibility that kind of keeps him here. So even if he could go, he can't.
Yeah. And your story says that his mother was only 54. So that's pretty young.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things they're seeing, is they're really seeing this affecting people across all age groups. And, you know, of course, you know, we don't know what was going on with his mom and exactly, you know, why she got so seriously ill. But, you know, there's concern that it could be the variant, that it could have been that she just didn't get really good care because of the hospital situation. You know, any number of factors. But yeah, it's just really awful. And yeah, I mean, I interviewed probably half a dozen people with connections to India for this story, and every single one of them, you know, had many family members who were ill. Most of them had family members who had died, family members who couldn't get into hospitals, who couldn't get treatment. And it was just, the situation is just incredibly dire. I don't think it's possible to really get that across, just how bad things are.
Yeah. And as you kind of alluded to, this isn't some abstract crisis half a world away. For many Bay Area residents, they have very close ties to India. In your story, it says 300,000 people living here are from India or have family there. So it's really impacting Bay Area people, too.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, most folks I talk to still have a lot of family in India. And this surge that they're experiencing, it's not really just isolated to like one part of the country. It's like swept across the entire country. So it's like there's no part that feels safe right now.
And it's such a different picture from here, of course, where most adults are vaccinated. And now, you know, mass vaccination sites are even having trouble kind of giving away the doses. But are we ever really going to be safe when there's flare-ups in other parts of the world?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really important question. And the answer is yes and no. I mean, on the one hand, we have done such a great job now with our vaccination. We've really kind of gotten to such a level that it's very unlikely we would ever see anything like what's happening in India right now, or even mm-hmm. really anything like what we experienced with the winter surge in the Bay Area and in California. So on the one hand, we're in really good shape in that. On the other, you know, as long as we still have this virus kind of raging out of control in any part of the world, we're not going to see the end of this pandemic. We're going to be kind of constantly living in this state of, you know, always sort of waiting for the virus to kind of re-enter the country. Even if we get it tamped down to really low levels, you know, there's always going to be these reservoirs. It's always going to be this virus kind of out there, you know, ready to kind of come into the country. And, you know, we worry about, you know, when you see these kinds of numbers, you worry about these variants, which is how the virus mutates, is when it spreads, it mutates and creates, you know, which can lead to kind of different behaviors in the virus. It can make it more infectious. It can make it, you know, more severe. It can help it evade the vaccines. So as, you know, these numbers kind of spike in India, we know that these variants are being created, and there's just no way to keep those, you know, to contain those to one country. There's nothing we can do with our borders to prevent those cases from coming in once they exist. So, you know, and so if they see a variant that can, you know, escape our vaccines, or that is more infectious, or that causes more serious disease, you know, we're always going to have people who aren't vaccinated in the United States, who aren't able to be vaccinated, who choose not to, who don't have access to, whatever. And that's going to mean we're always at risk. And at some point our vaccines will wear off, right? Like, we're going to mm-hmm. need booster shots. We don't know when that is exactly. So yeah, I mean, as long as there's these kind of surges and these situations happening anywhere in the world, then that's just something we're always going to have to face. We're always going to have to think about and deal with kind of in our own communities.
Great. Well, we will be right back after a quick break to hear about a more uplifting story from you, Aaron. You can support Fifth in Mission and the newsroom that creates it by signing up for unlimited Chronicle access at sfchronicle.com/pod. Welcome back, Aaron Allday. And you have another story out that I know will be interesting to a lot of parents in particular, which is a vaccine is on the way for 12 to 15-year-olds. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, this is really a really uplifting, exciting news.
Yay!
Yes, I know. So Pfizer a couple weeks ago submitted its application with the FDA to get approval to vaccinate 12 to 15-year-olds, so that kind of preteen and young teen age group. You know, of course, it's not guaranteed that the FDA will approve it in that group, but the numbers that we saw from Pfizer from their trials in that age group looked really promising. The vaccine seemed to be super effective, no, you know, bad outcomes or side effects. So, you know, most people seem to think that it will get approval, and it probably will be sometime in May. So presumably sometime fairly soon, which is fantastic, especially with our vaccine supply actually looking pretty good at this point. We actually have more, you know, supply than demand in a lot of places. So, you know, presumably we could get, you know, this age group, these middle school students and high school students vaccinated, a lot of them vaccinated before the school year starts, which I know, you know, it won't be required for schools, but and it won't be necessary, but it'll be a huge, I think, reassurance for a lot of kids and parents and educators to get, you know, a big block of those kids vaccinated.
And so Pfizer has already asked for approval, and then you said Moderna probably will soon as well.
So Moderna is about a month behind Pfizer on its trials. So they should be, people expect them to apply for authorization soon, maybe anytime now, and then probably get approval like about a month or so after Pfizer. So yeah, we should have two options for kids in that age group this summer.
And how do they decide on the age groups when they're testing? Like, it's very specific, 12 to 15. Any idea, you know, why those ages are chosen?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like, you know, the 12 and up tends to be more kind of in that adult category. I mean, you know, it's kind of a puberty thing, right? Like, this just our body chemistry.
True.
And kids in that age group tend to be more in the adult side of things, you know, versus kids who are younger than that. But, you know, I know that that's one factor. I'm sure that there are many other factors that kind of have a long history or maybe particular to this to COVID, but they think that it's primarily that's the reason. There could be other reasons that I'm not aware of.
I ask because my kids are not yet 12. So selfishly, I want to know when vaccines will be ready for little kids.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea?
It's going to be a while for those little kids, unfortunately. A lot of folks I talk to seem to think that it probably won't be towards the end of this calendar year and maybe even early 2022. They're just taking their time. I mean, you know, those kids do pretty well with COVID. So it's like we're less worried about serious illness with them. We're less worried about, you know, how they transmit it. They seem to be pretty safe from the disease itself. So that means, you know, you kind of take your time with the trials and they're going to have to, with that age group too, they have to really think about dosing a lot more. Cause that's another thing with that kind of younger teenage group is, you know, just body size, right? Like they're a little bit bigger. And so you can kind of dose them a little bit more on the adult scale, whereas little kids, you've got to be thinking about how much of this you're going to give them, how much do they need? You know, there's just a lot of those mm-hmm. factors that go into it.
And you're not anticipating that California would require vaccines for school, but they'll just be an option.
Yeah. I mean, you know, full disclosure, I haven't had confirmation one way or the other from the state on that. I did ask them and they haven't gotten back to me yet. But everybody I talked to in counties and schools said they just did not imagine that happening. It's just, mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of diseases. There's a lot of vaccines that require for schools. So California is actually pretty strict on that compared to other states. But there is a process, a pretty lengthy process for getting a vaccine onto that schedule. And especially with these vaccines, even for adults now, they just have that emergency authorization. So they're not mm-hmm. officially approved by the FDA yet. That's expected soon for the adults, but it won't be anytime real soon for the younger kids. And it's hard to imagine the state mandating that. I don't think the state could mandate it for an emergency authorization. But again, you know, I don't have that officially, you know, stated yet. So it just seems to me like nobody I talk to can really imagine a scenario where it's required for the fall.
Mm-hmm. And I thought it was interesting that you pointed out that children may be easier to vaccinate than adults because kids get vaccinated all the time and are all seeing their pediatrician every year, and there's just more connections.
Yeah, I it's one of those things where I hadn't thought about it, and then as soon as somebody mentioned it to me, I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense, right? Like, you know, people are just used to getting kids into their doctors and they get their shots, and this is just sort of a normal thing for kids even in that age group, and for parents to have that relationship. It's actually more complicated to get adults because, you know, I mean, so some adults are pretty good about flu shots, but most of us, you know, we don't go in to get vaccinated very often. We don't, and doctors don't, of adult patients don't necessarily know how to talk to them even about vaccines, whereas pediatricians are very comfortable having those conversations with parents.
Well, thank you as always for enlightening us and for joining the podcast.
Thanks for having me again, Heather.
Thank you to Erin Alday for joining me today, to Taya Francesca Price for producing this episode, and to you for listening.